This is Glenn Hauser with World of Radio 2095. World of Radio is a listener-supported public service program about communications around the world. Above all, the dynamic medium of international shortwave between the AM and FM bands. On this edition, recorded July 15th, Bermuda, Canada, Cuba, Germany, Kashmir, Oklahoma, Spain, South Sudan, Thailand, USA, Vanuatu, Venezuela, Vietnam, S.W. Elling is back, and the Propagation Outlook. Standard disclaimer, lots of sporadic EFMDX this week at the peak of the summer season. For example, Rob Ross in London, Ontario, heard three Bermuda stations June 28th between 1515 and 1525 UT on 89.1 ZBM, which goes by the moniker Ocean 89, 103.3 ZFV, which is Vibe 103, and 105.1 ZFB1, which is Bermuda Spirit, all these listed as only 1 kilowatt. This may seem quite exotic, but actually, he's only 1,161 miles from Bermuda to London, Ontario, which is a normal single-hop sporadic E distance. So anyone else in the, say, 600 to 1,400-mile range from Bermuda should be on the listen-out for these and the other Bermuda FM stations listed on the following frequencies: 94.9, 100.1, 102.7, 107.5, and 98.3. We have a remote chance of hearing them via double hop further into North America, such as Oklahoma. The trouble is, the midpoint is approximately North Carolina, where there may well be interfering stations on the same frequency. For single hop, however, since Bermuda is so isolated, it's quite possible there could be an opening bringing in nothing else but Bermuda. So once again, keep an ear on those particular frequencies if there's any chance of DX from that direction. For about an hour on July 11th, I was getting FMDX from opposite directions at once, both Florida and Idaho and vicinity, which means that at either end of those, there might have been double-hop DX, but we're out of luck here in deep mid-North America. Another sporadic E-opening brought in lots of Alberta and Saskatchewan stations on July 14th. One of the most interesting was on 95.3, which is called Creek FM. It's from the Okanese, that's O-K-A-N-E-S-E, First Nation Reserve, which is northeast of Regina. Its real Canadian call sign is C-H-X-L-F-M. Of course, I report in much more detail, including the time, but for others trying to hear it, there's not much point since FMDX happens when it happens. The unrest in Cuba led to an immediate consequence, extension of the schedule of Radio Marti, which had been signing off around 04 or 05 UT, although it previously had been running all night, and now it is apparently staying on all night, on 7435 and 7335 and 6030. At first, the top two were very strong here, with little evidence of jamming, but the Cubans soon caught on. We were, of course, wondering how Cuban radio would be playing the situation, so I was sure to tune in for the early English broadcast from Radio Havana, July 12th at 2300 on 11880. Well, they were not ignoring it, as some had predicted, but instead, it was the lead story. But of course, with the commie government spin, they reported what President Díaz-Canel had said about it on TV, blaming the criminal demonstrations on social media and the USA waging unconventional war on the island, and emphasized counter-demonstrations by those supporting the revolution. One of the complaints was power outages. They said the Matanzas power station was being repaired and would be back online the next day. As for Radio Marti, Dan Robinson, a critic of his former employer, suggests that at long last the Office of Cuba Broadcasting has fulfilled its mission to stir up trouble inside Cuba. He says it was no secret that Radio Marti was designed to encourage anti-Castro government feelings. Now its purpose achieved, riots and unrest in the streets directed at the post-Fidel Castro government. Ryan Elgood forwards the YouTube from K0LWC, alleging that Cuba started jamming the 40-meter ham band between 7110 and 7160, especially 7133, which seems to be a popular South Florida Spanish frequency. I could hear this too. It was rather spread out and amorphous, like Cuban pulse jamming, which not necessarily targets broadcast stations, so we're not sure if this is deliberate. But Chris Smolensky in Maryland says he ran a direction finding on that and confirmed that it is coming from Cuba. In the British DX Club, Alan Pennington forwards news from the FB of Shortwave Service July 15th, saying that a severe storm in Germany has affected their Karl-Kreckel broadcasting station, which has been interrupted. We're still hearing the clandestine for Kashmir on Tuesdays only, between 15 and 1529 UT on 15170. It's called Kashmir Civitas. Yes, that's a Latin word, strangely enough. But they are mainly in Urdu, with some English terms I heard, such as foreign occupation, accompanied by strumming music underneath. This lasted until Salam Aleikum and Azad Azad, meaning freedom, at 1528, then switching to a minute of blues songs in English before going off the air at 1529. I'm not getting much long-distance Tropo TVDX, but I do get some Oklahoma stations by Tropo, which are far enough away and low enough power not to be seen without some enhancement. One of particular interest, like the one in Canada, this one is for the Native Americans on Channel 35 from Concho, which is a little town just west of Oklahoma City. I was getting it for about half an hour, UT July 8th, starting at 0315. It's really K35MV-D, but it identifies as 47.1 FNX, or CATV-47, I guess where it's found on Cox Cable in Oklahoma City. They were playing films from the National Film Board of Canada about First Nations affairs. FNX. The network they're with is FNX, which stands for First Nations Experience. More about it at www.fnx.org. But this particular station is known as Cheyenne and Arapaho Television. On Monday, July 12th at 2209, REE, English from Spain on 17855 and others, after the news, Justin Coe went into the third edition of his twice-monthly DX program, as he calls it. It's really a mailbag. And this was obviously non-scripted. He says he's working from home, where temperatures were above 30 degrees Celsius, with open windows letting in noise as well as a pleasant breeze. However, I could never hear any of that noise he was worried about. There was only one email on this program. It was from one of our contributors as well, Alan Holder on the Isle of Wight. They lamented that his colleague Allison Hughes has retired early, and Alan was wondering about her replacement, Amy Egan. Is she on permanent staff? No, she's semi-permanent, like an intern for 6 months, but she is tech-savvy, unlike Justin and Allison. He's still looking for a better title for this new twice-monthly show. It could be Radio Waves, which they've used before, or You Write Us, We've Got Mail, or No Se Escribe, as Alan suggests. Previously, the same show repeated on Wednesday, but I don't know if it did this time. On the occasion of the 10th anniversary of the independence of South Sudan, July 9th, 2011, Dr. Hans-Jürg Biener in Germany writes about broadcasts to, if not from, South Sudan. He says on 9 July this year, there were no big celebrations. High hopes had not been met. Instead, South Sudan went from an independence war to a big number of internal quarrels. There are two international stations focusing on events in South Sudan. Radio Tamazuch, which is T-A-M-A-Z-U-J, in African language, including news in English, Tuesdays and Fridays at 1544 for 12 minutes, and also repeated Wednesdays and Saturdays at 0414. These broadcasts, starting at 1459, are on 15150 via Madagascar and 15400 via France, and from 0329, 7315 via Vatican and 11650 via Madagascar. He says these transmitters are currently used. The English segment was generally pessimistic on 9 July. All items and some more could be found at the website radiotomazuk.org/en. There is South Sudan in Focus, which is actually a specialized program of Voice of America at 1630 to 17 UT, 11910 via Saint Thomé, 15390 via UAE, 15660 via Lampertheim, Germany, on Monday to Friday. User reception, he says, on these frequencies varies, but reception is okay on all three on the 9th of July. And another station, well audible and dedicating much time to South Sudan and its Independence Day, was Vatican Radio at 1615 to 1630 on 11620. They reported on a joint message of Pope Francis and Christian leaders calling on South Sudanese leaders to work towards peace, and another message of South Sudanese Christian leaders along the same lines. At Radio Thailand, Bruce Lender in Portland, Oregon, says on July 14th, I've been hearing Thailand booming in here in Portland on 9390 in English and Thai around 13 to 14 UT. Looks like the bands are finally perking up. David Cole and Mike Cooper send some opinion by the editorial board of the Washington Post July 13th, titled The Voice of America Whistleblowers Have Been Vindicated. It starts as follows. The State Department's Office of Inspector General has determined that 6 federal employees in the agency that oversees VOA were wrongly targeted for termination from their jobs by the Trump administration. Unjustified and retaliatory was the assessment of the government watchdog. The findings don't come as a big surprise. 5 of the employees had already been returned to their jobs after President Biden took office, but they nonetheless stand as a stark reminder of the havoc caused to this important news agency by the Trump administration, and of the even greater damage that would have occurred had Donald Trump been reelected. Mike Cooper also sends this, a translation from BBC monitoring selections of news highlights from Bangladesh's Bengali language press on July 14th. It's at mzamin.com. Voice of America announces end of its Bangla radio service. It's ending the service that served Bangladesh and the Indian states of West Bengal, Assam, and Tripura for 63 years. The FM and shortwave transmissions of VOA would officially end on 17 July, according to a media release. But the service's television and social media will expand considerably as these platforms are more heavily used by VOA Bangla's 16 million weekly audience members. It was launched in January 1958, when there was still East Pakistan. It says the service's shortwave radio audience is now less than 1%. VOA Bangla's social media audiences have grown significantly in recent years. Upcoming specials on WRMI, Manuel Mendez forwards news that Atlantic 2000 will be on shortwave, courtesy of Radio for Peace International, which is already on WRMI. There will be an Atlantic 2000 hour as follows. Friday, July 16th at 20 on 15770. Sunday the 18th at midnight UT on 9395. And Sunday the 18th at 13 on 15770. The internet transmissions from radioatlantic2000.free.fr are Saturday the 17th at 09 and Sunday the 18th at 13 UT. Furthermore, Terry Cogan updates us on the continuing series sponsored by Texas Radio Shortwave and WRMI to present relays of European pirates and low-power licensed broadcasters, many of which have not been heard in North America for many years, if ever. This is on Friday nights in North America, 10 p.m. Eastern, or UT Saturdays at 0200 on 5800. On July 17th, it's Radio Merlin, the third in the series, and the following week, July 24th, Radio Monique International from the Netherlands. Via kilohertz, megahertz, and gigantichertz, World of Radio 2095. Also bringing you the non-commercial website, worldofradio.com. Our thanks this week for financial support from Peter Jones in West Sussex, who sent a contribution via PayPal to WORADIO@yahoo.com. Those not necessarily need to be in U.S. funds, unlike checks or money orders on a U.S. bank, to Glenn Hauser, P.O. Box 1684, ENID OK 73702. The superstation of WBCQ still off the air from 9330. Alan Weiner Worldwide was really upset on July 10th when he told us more about it. He said they paid top dollar for the equipment, and it keeps breaking down. Not just the plate amplifier tube costing 200 kilodollars, which broke in half, something unprecedented, but many other problems. He says the transmitter has never run at full power. Maybe it's been at half power. And he'd been unable to get antenna crews to work on the rotatable beast, even though high pay was available. Manufacturers are passing the buck rather than rushing out to repair things. He says, I've had it, I'm burned out. Also, he won't say who, but he does say they are working on shutting down WBCQ. Larry Will reports irreverently on some of the wacky religious shows he runs across, such as on WWCR 12160, July 4th at 1919. He says it's the angry, pretentious remnants ministry a-hole show, angry preaching about Yah and hating everyone in the world, and revealing a bizarre conspiracy theory that the name Jesus signifies allegiance to Zeus because it has U.S. in the name. Get it? This was originally on 12160, but he was actually getting a very strong signal on 26005, which is the sum of two WWCR frequencies, 12160 and 13845. He heard that again at 1709 UT, July 4th, that composite signal, but not clear whether it's produced in the receiver or actually transmitted. In case it was receiver overload, it was a PL880. Well, all I can say is that I have such a receiver, and I've not received WWCR on any of my receivers on 26005, but if it's actually going out, that would require sporadic e-propagation. Furthermore, on July 14th and 15th, I found all three frequencies during the 24 hours of the number one transmitter of WWCR missing, that is 3215 at 01 to 11, 15825 at 11 to 22, and 6115 at 22 until 01. Something very wrong with their number one transmitter, while their other three frequencies at all times were coming in well as usual. And one more possible problem for WWCR. Ivo Ivanov, Observer Bulgaria, notes in HFCC as of July 14th, a station in the Netherlands with 1 kilowatt has changed frequency, as registered from 5940 to 5935, available 24 hours, while WWCR is on there for 12 hours from midnight until 12, with mostly the university network. Graced Facebook is also the place one must look for updates about the resurgence of WMLK, the Assemblies of Yahweh Station in Pennsylvania, the shortwave. Lately they posted lots of photos of the installation coming together on the site, and Richard Langley summarizes them. On 8 June, a progress report, the transmitter and its peripherals being positioned for their final locations. On 10 June, a new security gate to protect the premises and the camera monitor system. Also on that date, transmitter and peripherals now in permanent places, overhead work next. On 22 June, more pictures were added to the WMLK radio post. On 23 June, illustrating working on the ballon duct with feed line inside. 29 June, starting on the cable tray, now complete, by Deacon Nathaniel Meyer and S.M. John Dalton. On 2 July, photos depicting WMLK at night, the work area of their technician at the back of one photo, and to the right of the other picture. On 5 July, the technician has begun to run the fiber optics cables. On 9 July, the cable rack that carries the wires from the PSM to the contactors in the transmitter. And also on 9 July, Roberto, the WMLK radio technician, readied and installed pre-cut cables for PSM modules A401 to A412, the high-voltage transformer secondary delta connections, but not terminated yet. Ben Cobb, who keeps us up to date on FCC actions, especially concerning shortwave, says they've joined the 21st century, announcing that license applications for certain international facilities, including high-frequency broadcast stations, will need to be filed electronically. This should make it easier to review HF applications. He says, I remember some of these documents I inspected in person at the FCC were filled out in barely legible scrawls. Those licenses were granted anyway. Whatever happened to penmanship counts? It's amazing how some major AM or FM stations can run for considerable periods with nothing but dead air. That is, the transmitter on, but no modulation. Such was the case July 9th at 0630 UT from KRVN 880 in Lexington, Nebraska. I think Jim Bohannon was supposed to be on, but instead I could null it and hear a couple of other stations, probably KHAC in New Mexico and KJOZ in Texas. Up on Asilomar State Beach, California, Ron Howard says, an excellent night here on July 9th at 0703 UT, 1710 AM, KHMB, Half Moon Bay, California, was being heard, lightly mixing with the same frequency Travis Air Force Base emergency announcement. They're playing pop songs by John Denver, Lynn Berry, and Peggy Lee. He says, not often I have such good reception of this one-watt station 90 miles up the coast from me. By the way, John Denver died when he crashed into Monterey Bay, piloting his experimental amateur aircraft, a location very close to where I do my DXing. The latest on Radio Vanuatu from Ron Howard in California. On July 15th, he says the harmonic was heard 7890, at times relaying Paradise FM 98. This was from 0705 UT, but they had some issues with their audio. There was something in Spanish and in English, maybe something to do with the upcoming Port Vila, New Caledonia Regional Youth Festival. After 08 UT, a number of times there were two different audio feeds at the same time, creating a mess. But at 803, a fairly clear ID and slogan, anywhere, anytime, Paradise FM, simply the best. He says, the first time I've ever heard this situation. And the day before, July 14th, he was hearing both harmonics, 7890 and 11835, with the news update at 0600 about the vaccine. And at 6:30, a regular segment of messages in Bislama, starting and ending with nice indigenous drum music. He says Wednesday continues to be the only day that CNR2 on the same frequency 11835 closes down at 06 UT, leaving Vanuatu in the clear. July 10th at 0114 UT, I checked 6205 on the Bonaire remote receiver for ROCV Venezuela. And come to think of it, it was not on the air then, nor had I seen any reports of it since May 31st, so perhaps Radio Onda Corta Venezuela is gone for good. On 8812 USB, Ron Howard reports an NID July 14th at 1337, till cut off with no announcement at 1400. It was nonstop Vietnamese indigenous music, singing and chanting, with a fairly good signal. Not sure who this is. Semi-finally, with some time to spare, I quote from an editorial by T.J. Skip Arey, N2EI of Beverly, New Jersey, in the July issue of Messenger from the Canadian International DX Club. It's titled, Shortwave Listening is Back. Let's not screw it up this time. I've been in this hobby more or less since the days when AM radios had Conelrad markings. You may have also noticed I've written a few words about the hobby over the years. There's no denying the hobby took a bit of a dive in the 1990s, as many international broadcasters began to realize they could reach a wider audience by purchasing a $2,000 internet server instead of a $2 million transmitter. But there were other factors at work. Throughout the 1980s, leading up to those 1990s, several things occurred serving to drive many people away from the hobby, long before the internet came onto the scene in a big way. A small number of self-appointed DXperts began to rise to prominence, putting forth the idea that they were the sole arbiters of what counted as real SWLing and DXing. Anyone who did not live up to their self-proclaimed standards was at least ignored, or at worst, actively vilified in club and even national hobby publications. It was not uncommon for those elites to look down their DX noses at anyone who was enjoying the hobby with anything less than a multi-thousand-dollar receiver. It does not take too deep a dive into the archives of the hobby at that time to discover that more than a few folks taking those positions had some level of financial interest in selling those very same pieces of gear that were well out of range of the budgets of many hobbyists. True, one of those unobtainium receivers could garner you a handful of rare signals, but for the most part there was plenty of good listening to be done with a modest receiver and a bit of tenacity. This was a notion that did not sit well with the elites at all. Loggings listed with inexpensive radios were often dismissed as simply not possible compared to the efforts of the DXperts. So as these so-called DXperts flexed their publishing muscles in regular club publications, they then went on to develop a number of invitation-only club publications where they could proudly pat each other on their backs for their remarkable achievements over the common folk. So what happened? Regular SWLs began to vote with their feet. Clubs began to shrink, and national publications began to pack it in. When easy access to the Internet came on the scene, it was easy for folks to wring their hands and blame the new technology for their shrinking interest. But riddle me this. Why then, while the SWL hobby was shrinking, amateur radio continued to grow? If you compare ham publications of that era, they were for the most part very inviting of newcomers. You would be hard-pressed to find a ham magazine of that era that did not devote some number of pages specifically to bringing less experienced folks along. Ham radio has a long history of folks referred to as elmers, men and women who go out of their way to help people grow in their understanding and expertise in the radio hobby. So that's enough bitching about ancient history. It's a new day, and I'm here to tell you it's a great day, too. A beginning SWL today has access to dozens of very affordable receivers with performance characteristics that even those old DXperts with their multi-thousand-dollar rigs could not even dream of. The current level of technology gives anyone interested in the hobby the ability to hear just about anything on the bands within the limits of propagation for less than the cost of a night out on the town instead of several months' wages. What makes this old radio guy happy is seeing that more than a few folks are going out of their way to mentor new folks into the hobby, often using the Internet to bring people into the fold and give them the info they need to thrive. Of course, CIDX Messenger is doing its part, such as Brian Penny's Radio Basics, to give people just getting started info that will keep them listening. A shout-out to Jules Letourneau and his YouTube presence with his biweekly live shortwave radio stream, where folks are encouraged to ask even the most basic questions about the hobby. This level of encouragement was what was missing from those DXperts back in the day. In CIDX, beginners can show their loggings and ask questions without fear of ridicule. Instead, they find encouragement and support. While there may not be the plethora of signals to sort out we experienced in the bad old days, there is still lots of fun to be had. Seeing enthusiastic new folks posting online and in club pubs about what they're picking up with their modern portables shows there is still a lot of life in the hobby. We just have to remember that we are all in this together. We were all beginners once. And if anyone ever thinks they are superior to anyone else in the hobby, they can go take up golf. No DXperts need apply. Have fun, says Skip Airy in this CIDX editorial. The propagation outlook from SWPC Boulder issued July 12th. After some active levels, ANKNSC is expected to be only 8-3 or 5-2 from July 16th at least through August 7th. Solar flux rising from 75 July 16th to a peak of 81 on the 21st and down to 74 by August 3rd. That's World of Radio 2095. Glenn Hauser thanking for listening and urging you to take good care of yourself and each other with a standard disclaimer.